Ash is a little boy transitioning to be a girl. 9-year-old Ash skips across the main road, a blonde ponytail swishing from side to side. She, Ash, was born a boy and now wants to be known as a girl. And she has been since she was 4. She's just emerged from the Tavistock and Portman Hospital Gender Identity Development Service in North London. And what she really fancies is a chicken nuggets and fries from her local KFC. She's jittery, a cocktail of relief and adrenaline. Ash is bright and she's researched the facts. Google is useful like that. She knows about hormone blockers, monthly injections that will, if she is prescribed them, put her puberty on hold. She enjoys talking to children, psychotherapists, and family therapists. They understand where she's coming from, but sometimes they want to know how she feels. And that is tough to articulate when you're not 10 yet. You're being asked to talk about big, embarrassing stuff like puberty when you don't want to look at your own body in the bath, when you're convinced yourself that you're developing breasts, although this is biologically impossible, at least for now. She tells the consultant that when she's older, she'll have a womb transplant and have a baby. She's read about it online. They do it in Sweden, Ash says. The consultant explains that it's not always straightforward, but that's not what she wants to hear. When the questions feel too difficult, Ash, who wants to be a trans model when she grows up, gets teary and asks to leave the room. It's at home in southern England where she lets rip, and it's her mother, Terry, on whom she takes out the fear and confusion. Shouting, slamming doors. In the past, she's been taunted at school, beaten up, called a she-male. When she was 7, she sent her mother suicidal texts. Sometimes family life revolves around how Ash feels from moment to moment. That was an article written in 2016 in the Times magazine. And I read that. And as we've talked about a little bit here, even this evening, as a Christian, as a father, but even simply at the level of being another human being, your heart can't help but break at the stories like that. And perhaps you're here this evening, and that story or something like it is part of your family at this minute in time. The last thing that I want to do, or indeed the last thing that any Christian in here wants to do, is to treat this as a problem. That's the first thing I want to say here this evening. It's perhaps the most important thing that you need to hear tonight. Because there are experts out there, and they're trying to solve this. They see it as a problem, or a project, or a predicament. But can I assure you this evening, as a father, but as a Christian more importantly, that belittles you. Because you are a person. And when you turn to the Bible, as we've been referring to here this evening, it does say that you have been fearfully and wonderfully made. That God knows all your days from the beginning to the end. And he knows your name. For most of us, allow me just a moment of shameless self-promotion. I begin in my book like this. For most of us, we go to bed at night and we may have a nightmare. But in the morning, we can wake up and get on with our day. For people like Ash, and perhaps for someone you know, or perhaps even yourself here tonight, you go to sleep at night to escape the nightmare. But each and every day, when you wake up, there it is again. And so as a Christian, as we gather here this evening, now I don't know any of your stories, can I assure you that the Bible and the God of the Bible does not see you as a problem. He sees you as a person. And it may surprise you to know that actually, when you turn to the pages of this book, the very first thing you run into is the fact that it says, actually, in some sense, you're right in your desire to change. Now, I know that for others of us in here this evening, that will come as a huge shock, given all that I have said just thus far, that actually, in some sense, for those who are living with the confusion and the hurt and the pain and the complexity of transgenderism, in some sense, you're right in your desire to change. Because you don't need to turn very far in this book to discover that the world in which we live in is full of pain and hurt and sorrow and confusion. Chapter 3 of the Bible affirms that for us all. Ever since chapter 3, the world has been in a mess. Most of us will know, won't we, as we think back to the opening two chapters of the Bible, that what we have is a picture of perfection, where we have Adam and Eve, male and female, men, a man and a woman. And everything was good about that. They had a good relationship with their maker. They had a good relationship with the world. They had a good relationship with one another. I'd go so far as to say they had a good relationship with themselves. It was as it was meant to be. But then by chapter 3, we all know, or at least most of us will understand, that it completely fell apart. To the degree that the relationship with their maker was not only broken, and the relationship with their world and environment was fractured. Every marriage in here tonight is a testimony that things are not as they ought to be. And even within ourselves, do we all really understand who we truly are? Do we all, every day, even like who we are? I remember whenever I was newly married, I often found myself saying to my wife in that first year of marriage, and it's continued ever since then, I might add, that I just don't actually like myself very much today. Because if marriage does anything, it magnifies both the good, yes, but also the bad. And so as we come to the pages of this book, a book that people want to throw out today as being antiquated and out of date, as being a danger and capable of narrowing our mindset, as we come to the pages of this book, we don't have to go very far to see that it explains everything perfectly now as it is. And therefore, as we think about transgenderism, it is today, I think, in some ways in the headlines written across the world, declaring that things are not as they ought to be. And so I want you to know tonight, this book, as I said before, is your story writ large. And in some sense, you're not wrong in your desire to change. But, and this is very important, what you and what this book tells us all is that in your desire to change, you're not going anywhere near far enough. And that may surprise many of us again. What could be more radical? What could be more radical than wanting to change the body that you've been given? It's not just about dyeing your hair or getting a crown in your teeth or trying to keep some sort of definition in your body. It's not about that. What could be more radical than you wanting to change your entire appearance, your biological sex? What could be more radical than taking hormone blockers or submitting yourself for sex reassignment surgery? What could be more radical than that? We read from John's Gospel, John chapter 10. We're going to look at that as we close in just a moment. But in John chapter 3, we're told what could be more radical than that. And this is a verse that rolls off the tongue. It's a verse that you could probably even say backwards in your sleep. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whosoever should believe in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. That now, today, is the most radical thing that anybody can do. As we talked about, our culture, our society, has taught us all to think that the most important thing for us to do is to decide what's right for me, and woe betide anybody who contradicts me. But Jesus, even in that very familiar verse, wants us not to believe in ourselves, but to believe in him. And in the context of John chapter 3, what does that do? Well, Jesus, talking to Nicodemus, says that in doing that, you will be born again. You'll be given a brand new start. Your relationship with your Maker will be completely restored. How you view the world and the story that's going on will completely change. The relationships that you'll be brought into with others who have given themselves to him will be deepened and enriched, and the understanding that you have of yourself, I venture to say, will be turned upside down as you believe in him. Because you see, Christianity is always and always has been a message about life. That's what Jesus says, isn't it, in John chapter 10 and verse 10. This is what you're looking for. As someone perhaps who's struggling with your gender identity, you're looking at last to have that peace, that coherency, that integrity, fullness of life. Jesus says that's exactly why he has come. Have a look with me in John chapter 10 and verse 10. Interestingly, he says, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I want you to hear those words new and afresh tonight. Jesus, in the context here, is actually talking about the religious leaders of his day. He looks around the religious leaders of his day and he said, they've failed in their duty. They haven't led you into God's truth. They're blind shepherds leading the sheep. And he calls them thieves, robbing the people of what God actually intended for them. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. But you might as well apply that not simply to religious institutions and religious leaders. You might as well apply that to any philosophy or ideology that seeks to define you as to who you really are. Materialism. You base yourself on what you earn and what you can make. You're going to find yourself coming up short when it matters most. Any ideology you want to choose. Nationalism. You build your identity on the fact that you're Northern Irish, from a particular part of Northern Ireland, not the other part, but the correct part, the better part. You build your identity on anything, and you will find yourself eaten out from the inside out. You'll be hollowed out. The thief comes only to kill and steal and destroy. But look at Jesus' words. He wants you to build your life on only one thing. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. That's where I got the phrase from. None of us will truly understand who we really are until we see him as he actually is. So let me end with just two questions. Have you done that? Have you seen him as he really is? Go to the pages of any gospel. Read it for yourself. Stick with any of the churches that are represented here tonight. And as they open God's word, Jesus will walk off the pages to you. Ask him to show himself to you, and he will. But if you have done that, which I'm supposing here is actually the bracket on which most of us are included here this evening, let me ask you, do you believe that? Do you believe that in Jesus and him alone is life and life to the full? Do you? Because I would venture to say that if you do, and if you know this to be true, then you'll want everyone to be found in him. You want everyone to build their lives on him and on him alone. All other ground is sinking sand. Only in him is the solid rock to be found. So let us come to him. Let us build our lives in him. And let us point all people to the place where life may be found and life to the full. Let us pray.